So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have
Matthias ten Brink, chairman of Transavia. Is that right?
That's right. Chairman, managing director, CEO, whatever. The
big,
name,
big cheese, Le Grand Fromage.
Yeah, exactly.
So Matthias, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us about you, yourself, the work that you do, and a bit about Transavia?
Yep. Myself, Matthijs, CEO of Transavia since 2013, so almost 4 years. Before that, actually, a little experience with consumers or passengers, because I spent all my life in logistics and transportation. So first time I'm actually carrying around people instead of packages. The advantage being that when packages get lost, they can't tell anybody. The good thing of packages is they don't complain. So there is a big difference. On the other hand, when you talk about logistics, there's a lot of similarity as well. Started in my job with the overriding vision that in order to compete, to make the difference in a very competitive market, we're a so-called low-cost airline. We're medium-sized, based in France and the Netherlands, our two home markets. We're part of the Air France KLM group, and as Transavia, we're 100% daughter of KLM. And we realized that we would never have the scale some of our main competitors do have. In an industry where normally everybody says scale is the factor of success. And in order to make that difference, we first of all had to understand what our true DNA was. And then second, how to use that DNA combined with the possibilities of modern technology into, let's say, a compelling offer for our customers. We exist for 50 years. We started as a charter company in the pure leisure part of traveling. And as such, also knowing we've been carrying all types of passengers. We carry the family that saves for 3 years for their hard-earned holiday. We carry groups of golfers. We have people actually buying their second house in South Europe based on our flight schedule. We are truly middle of the road and carrying everything. And as such, costs always have been important for us. Knowing it's about leisure and the fun of traveling, friendliness, hospitality, and trying to connect to our passengers, it has become part of our DNA. And I think one nice example of that is that when we get new cabin attendants, obviously we train them carefully, and once their training is finished and they get their wing, as we so call it, I'm always there.
Okay.
And I always try to explain them that they have the most important job in the company, because
they're
when
like
we truly interact with our passengers, that's on board, is where we will make and always have made the difference. And I always try to tell them in a way that every passenger has a story, a personal story. And it's been our ability to, when we interact, to bring that story up. And when we're lucky, but actually it's not luck, it's actually capability I've discovered, we can actually connect to that story and enrich that story. And that is the true moment of difference. And it won't happen with all the 189 passengers on board. But what's really typical is that you see one of our cabin attendants sitting on his or her knee, chatting with a passenger at a truly connected, intimate way. And it's not a coincidence. I've seen it flying after flying after flight. And I'm trying to teach the new cabin attendants that that is what we want. And sure, we have modern technology to help them with that and to get even better with that. But in the end, it's the human touch that always will make a difference.
So on that, so what's really interesting, there's a lot of companies that talk about we're customer centric, we empower our people to do the right sort of things. However, what's interesting to me is that I've spoken to lots of these different companies and yet their service doesn't improve. And it's not because they don't, the exec or the leadership doesn't believe in it, is that what, when you dig into it, I've learned that actually there's a difference between telling somebody that they're empowered and helping them understand what empowered means. So it's almost a bit like, so I was speaking to a telecoms technology firm. They say we're flat, super empowered, agile organization, and yet nothing happens. And actually what they figured out is that it's like actually we have to learn how to be empowered, or what empowerment really sort of means. And so I think what would be really interesting for me is that, because that's building it into your culture, but it's learning about what are the right things to do, or how to do the right things, or what's allowed, what's not allowed, kind of almost like where's the guide rails and things. So how do you do that? How do you build that sense of that might be a little bit strange or oddball, but it's the right thing for the right time with the right person. How do you build that into your sort of culture?
I think it's always been about how we interact with each other. And that's how we came to the almost mathematical formula, which we say PX, which stands for passenger experience, matches EX.
Okay.
Employee experience. Yeah. And it's believing that the way we interact with our own people, with our colleagues, is in the end the way they will interact mm-hmm. with the passenger. So when you talk about empowerment, you should really live it, set the example, and create a culture of safety where they actually feel able to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And making mistakes is actually a necessity. If they don't make mistakes, I always tell them, they don't try hard enough.
Mm.
Obviously, we try to avoid making the same mistake twice. Try to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And learning from those mistakes, obviously, is important. And that's where modern technology comes in, because now with all the data available, you can actually, with all the algorithms, try to improve that. But in the end, it's about the culture of safety that just try.
So it's like an experiential.
And be yourself, be authentic. It's a bit difficult to explain in the English language, but in the Dutch language, we have a difference in how you approach a certain senior person. You would say u, versus when you know somebody and you would say jij or you. And we just told them that we would like them to move from u to you or jij,
right,
to be a bit more familiar. But at the very same time, we said, but if you're raised to even say u to your father or your mother, it's okay to continue to say u. Mm-hmm. If you feel that a passenger would not appreciate,
yes,
it's okay to still. So the authentic behavior and for them the room to just find their own way is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always been the way also my predecessors have been acting in their roles.
Mm-hmm.
So when I said I'm always present when they get their wings, the same would go for my predecessor and the same for the one before him, etc., etc. So it's always been our culture to be there at those special moments and to celebrate successes with the whole organization. And I think in that way we have built this unique culture of what now is labeled as customer centricity. But it's always been there.
Sure.
The only thing I had to do was brush it off and let's say put it in front of everybody and say,
look at this, how cool is this?
And then organize the company around it. And add the technology perspective in order to enhance it and to scale it. And so it's actually quite an easy job.
So a lot of people will be listening to this going, damn it. It's not easy, it's hard. But so that reminds me of a... So I occasion to speak to Michael O'Leary about Ryanair's experience. So, and the backstory is I wrote a piece on Forbes, which, and the headline was, does Michael O'Leary really care about his customers, or is he just being pragmatic, when they had that big shift of strategy? And he wrote me a letter in reply to it. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. Not many people would do that. And I said, so I wrote back and said, thank you for your letter, blah, blah, blah. Can I do two things? Can I, one, quote the letter in a follow-up piece? And two, can I do you for my podcast? And he said yes to both of them. So, and then I got the story behind that. But for him, it was, they were trying to emulate Southwest Airlines, but completely on a no low cost, no frills basis. But he had this supposed epiphany or realization that actually you should stop, as he said, pissing off his customers. But they have very much a, we are a low cost, we are the low cost leader in every market that we're in, and then they're building the service element so it does, up to the point that it doesn't threaten that. Now, it sounds like you've always been customer and customer service first. Is that right?
I think it's right in the sense that in the emotional way.
Right.
I wouldn't say we've always been as customer friendly in a service way. We had a horrible on-time performance, which is part of your service. So we made a lot of mistakes in the past on the service front, but on the emotional connection, part of service or customer intimacy, we've always been extremely good. And I think that probably is the challenge for all our competitors, having the scale they have and coming from where they come from, is to replicate or to create that unique culture we just inherited. Mm. So on the service front, he might be actually improving, which is, I think, is great, and all the numbers prove he's doing something right. But we said, that's fine.
Yeah,
we improve our service as well. But we'll continue to focus on that unique aspect of the Transavia way of working.
And so you've alluded a couple of times to how you've used sort of technology and data to sort of enhance that. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit more about how that kind of, you know, how that works? And because that's basically data analytics and fancy AI technology, which is becoming the rocket fuel that kind of allows you to do more, I guess.
Yeah. But again, it started with the vision that our employees and our passengers are just part of the same equation, mm-hmm. and that they come together in a flight.
Yeah.
So we've built a concept, and we will translate it, by the way, also in an organizational form of trying to simplify everything we do in two to three journeys: the flight journey, the passenger journey, and the employee journey. And then we said, okay, if we want to support those journeys with modern technology, it needs to be one. It cannot be the typical CRM technology for the passenger journey.
One up here.
And it cannot be the hardcore airline operational applications for the flight journey, and it cannot be the typical HR BS we see these days for the employee journey. It has to be one platform, mm-hmm. because we want those interactions to be real time and coming from a single source of truth. Mm-hmm. And
you think the platform, the connected platform, is a single source of truth because that's the vessel.
The concept, exactly, of what we now call the Transavia Interaction Platform, TIP, was born. We looked for a technology that could actually help us to build that and for partners, mm-hmm. because we also knew we couldn't do it alone. And we, in the end, came after a very long and hard process to the choice of Pega. Mm-hmm. As we felt they could best interact with all of our existing systems and feed data back and forth. And they had the concept of the next best action, which we really, truly liked. Mm-hmm. And we, in the end, asked Accenture to step in to help us to implement actually the whole concept. And they liked it so much, they actually invested in the project as well.
Wow.
So here you see an example of what we used to call the Transavia ecosystem. Because we realized that as a relatively small player, also for Pega, we get a lot of attention and a lot of support. And the same goes for Accenture. But that's how we started, and that's what we're building.
Wow, cool. And the other thing you kind of talked about, because we were involved with a panel earlier on, and you alluded to it then, you talked about this idea that you have this platform which you can all coalesce around, but then you started talking about sort of trying to build an organization, an organizational structures that is adaptable and nimble and agile and all these kind of nice kind of things, but also still takes care of functional responsibilities. And it, because that's something I'm interested in, it's like this organizational structure of the future, that 20th century functional matrix, whatever they might be, are just not fit for purpose. So anymore. Yeah. And so can you tell me a little bit about how you're sort of wrestling that to the ground? Because I know there's other people, like, for example, ING have tried to build this agile sort of organization, how that's driving the transformation. I mean, are you going down the similar sort of road, or are you, what are you kind of doing?
I think we're trying to do it in three phases. At the very early stage of this concept of PX is EX.
Yeah.
We did two things. We started a leadership program, to introduce what we call a facilitating leadership style, meaning exactly what we talked about before, is creating a culture of empowerment, learning from mistakes instead of punishing people for it. So that's one. Mm-hmm. Second, we introduced three basic collaborative methods. One is Lean, obviously everybody familiar with. The second is Lean Startup, which is more
Eric Ries.
Exactly.
Minimum viable product, that sort of stuff.
And thirdly, Agile.
Yeah. People could argue that those things are mostly the same.
They are the same, but used for different purposes.
Okay.
And all in the end, in the core, coming back also to the same leadership style behind it. So that's why we chose those particular three and the leadership style. Then we realized we actually, in a unique circumstance as airlines, because on one hand, we operate in a compliance-driven, conservative, regulated industry with very old-fashioned technology. Our aircraft designs are from the 60s. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, with the other foot, we actually acting in a very innovative travel industry, which is probably at the forefront of a lot of the new developments. And we sort of have to deal with both. And most of the innovations are actually happening around the traveling, not so much around the actual flying from A to B. Mm-hmm. So the first step to break down the silos is to split the organization in, let's say, two speeds of development. One is what we call run and optimize, and the second is what we call change and innovate.
Okay.
And the only thing that binds them together is the strategy on one hand, which is continuously evolving, and the other hand, and that's mostly where I'm involved, is what we call resource allocation.
Right.
So we decide, based on the performance and the strategy, how much money we allocate to the run and optimize and how much money we allocate to the change in effect.
Okay.
And obviously, implicitly, most of our commercial activities would go into change and innovate, and most of our operational activities are within run and optimize. But more and more, we will try to combine those and to break down those silos. Once we are a step further ahead in the TIP project, so creating the platform, we will move those two speeds more and more together and synchronize those two speeds, and then organize the organization around the three journeys.
Right.
So we will actually organize, or just, so are you in the flight journey, or in the employee journey, or in the passenger journey? And in that, we also stopped looking at back office first front office, because everybody's front office, because everybody is involved in those three journeys. and the technology allows us to do so.
Sure.
So it is, on one hand, creating a lot of efficiencies and taking out waste, and on the other hand, it puts the focus where it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Because we only have two measurements for success. One is our passenger experience, and we measure that in our own way based on the 26 touch points we measure, but we also measure that in Net Promoter Scores. And compared to many other airlines, we're actually doing a very good job there. And we have created a similar measurement for our employee journey. So we also measure in 20 touch points an employee journey, being it a career, being it a flight, being it a shift, but we all measure that. And we also look at our employee promoter score, which is, at the moment, in all fairness, not at the same level as the passenger journey, mm-hmm. of the passenger experience. So we need to do a lot of work there as well. And that's a bit the vision going forward. But we need first to have the platform more mature,
yeah.
in order to support that type of organization. And from that on, we evolve again and again and again. But sure.
And what's the sort of the time frame on that? So I guess that you're probably in phase one right now, and then you'll look to...
We're moving from phase one to phase two. So okay. we've done the introduction of Agile, Lean Startup.
Right.
We're in the middle of the leadership program. We have created a setup for Run and Optimize, Change and Innovate. Today, we're maturing that, and we'll make a first step into, let's say, the journey organization, probably a year, 18 months from now.
Okay. Wow. Cool.
Yeah. Big adventure.
Absolutely. So a couple of final things. Also in the panel, you also referred to some really interesting research that you'd kind of carried out, or things, research findings that you carried out around fear, which I thought was fascinating, but also enlightening, because it talks to all the little things that you might not notice or might not pay attention to, and how it can make such a huge difference, but also act as an opportunity as well. So research on fear, Matthijs, over to you.
Yeah. Obviously, we look at everything that sits in the way of a positive customer experience.
Sure.
And one of the things we came upon was fear or anxiety. Because if you really don't like flying, and if you're so preoccupied with the fact that an aircraft may drop down from the air, there's no way you can enjoy a nice surface or a nice jet or whatever.
Sure.
We'll try to do. You're just so cramped. So we found that if we were able to reduce that level of fear or anxiety, we would actually open up our passengers for enjoying the moment of traveling.
Mm-hmm.
But we first had to understand where that fear came from, what moments that fear would present itself. And together with two hospitals and a university, we carried out a big research on actual flying passengers. We actually had kind of plasters on them measuring their anxiety level.
Sensors,
absolutely, yeah.
And how much are you sweating and all that, yeah. sort of, the heart rate and all that sort of
and
stuff.
And wow. even though some of the outcomes were sort of predictable, mm-hmm. like landing, taking off, the moment when the engines go into stationary, when you reach yeah. a certain altitude, when you sort of have the feeling it drops down a bit, those are fearful moments. But one of the surprises we came upon was boarding.
Right.
When you are pushing a lot of people at the same time into a very confined space. And the most surprising thing was, as I told also in the panel, the moment the pilot turns on the intercom to do his speech,
mm-hmm.
During flight, so normally after takeoff, and the way they normally act, there's always a little time before switching on the intercom and actually start to speak,
mm-hmm.
because they sort of make themselves comfortable, put down their coffee cup or whatever they do, or put their headsets right or I don't know what. And those 1 or 2 seconds are the most fearful moments in the whole journey.
Mm-hmm.
And while you cannot prevent all the other things from happening, because just the way aircraft works and fly, those are moments where you can actually make a difference.
Mm.
And so we've been helping our staff in, first of all, the awareness. Are you aware that this is actually happening? And are you aware how much influence you as cockpit or cabin crew have on anxiety? Is also how to teach them how to actually do better. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we've learned is that if they bring something personal into their speeches, something which explains that they have an interest also in landing safely and returning home safely, it helps immediately. So whatever you do, you talk about a party you need to go to, or whatever reason you want to have to go home, tell it.
Right.
Make it personal. Also, when you enter the boarding area and you see all those fearful people watching, oh, there's the crew, are they senior enough or are they whatever, make contact.
Wave. Say hello.
Say hello. And just talk with two or three passengers. Whatever you want to, just make contact. Very important. But we also used technology. We created a virtual reality movie, which you can actually now play also in your own phone and, mm-hmm. and with the Google glasses and whatever, where you are actually sitting, or you feel you're sitting in the cockpit. And when you look around, a captain, a pilot, will actually tell you what the typical device you're looking at is doing. And we know that fear comes from the perception you don't have control.
Yes.
And if you better understand how a cockpit works and how a pilot works, it already reduces the level of fear. So we're experimenting with that. On our website, we have tips for people, mm-hmm. Advice for people how to deal with fear. So fear reduction is a big topic for us in order to improve our customer experience.
Perfect. I love it. It's different. So it's a really different take, because there's a lot of talk about emotion and customer experience.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of fancy, fluffy kind of talk, but you're actually dealing with something that's quite tangible, which is it's flying, it's fear. How can we kind of alleviate some of that and do it in a really kind of concrete way, which is, I think, it's kind of fascinating. Couple of final questions. So what next? What's the big challenge next for Transavia? I mean, because you guys, it's I love the story. I love the what you're doing. It's a very there's not a lot of me too about it. This is us. This is what we're going to do. It's very individual, which I like, because it's like you're leading your market and doing your own thing, which is resonating with your customers. But what's next? What's over the horizon for you guys? What are the sort of the big challenges that you're thinking about?
Yeah, big chances, or and I'm always positive optimist as I am, but one thing we're looking at, or we need to look at, is what will happen on the distribution side. How will tickets be sold in the future? And there are two developments we need to look at. One is the role of the Amazons, the Googles, the Facebooks, mm-hmm. The Twitters, or whatever channel people are actually sort of in their normal lives. What role will they play in traveling and selling tickets? Where I strongly believe that fighting that development by further enhancing and promoting your own particular Transavia channel is a dead end in the end. Mm-hmm. So how do we know which are the winners of tomorrow, and where the customer preference in that sense will go to? And how do we connect to that? How do we continue to build a seamless travel experience? How do we stay relevant? How do we make sure our brand is still well recognized? How do we say we still get customer preference in that sense? And how do we keep an entry to the data? Mm. As those data enable us to improve day in, day out, our service and the customer intimacy. So that's one challenge we will need to deal with. And by saying this will happen, it doesn't mean I have an answer. For me, that it's what agility is all about. This, I may not have the answer, but the answer will present itself, and then we need to move fast.
Sure.
The second development, which could actually support or interact with the first one, is blockchain.
Right.
What will that do to selling tickets or reselling of tickets? Traveling.
What will it do for baggage tracking?
Will it further? How do you say that? Bring the power really back to the consumer. Then how do we act? Would we stop with what we do now? Is very inside out revenue management. I think increasingly it becomes very difficult to explain that on the very same trip, depending on the moment you book and fly, there's a difference between $30 and $400. Increasingly people won't understand and won't accept. So would we move to a world where we say, okay, we may have a weekend and a weekday difference, we may have a summer and a winter difference or something like that, but for the rest, our tickets are the very same price and everybody can sell them and resell them through blockchain. So at least it's secured and done. Mm-hmm. What would that do to my model? And those are the kind of questions we're asking ourselves. And we'll probably have to pilot and test them.
Sure.
In not so long future.
I guess you've also got to kind of ask as well, it's like how much do customers, or how much will they want to get involved in all of that? Because of different customers will have different preferences. And some people go like, just take care of it. Yeah. I don't care. And some people like, yes, I want control. I'll do
it. I think it will go to the two extremes.
Yeah.
And nothing in between.
Perfect. Thank you. So I have one final question. It's a bit of a selfish one. It's my own piece of kind of ongoing market research. So I wrote this book last year called How to Wow. And I've been asking everybody I've spoken to since for their perspective on what is wow service or wow experience for them. So I'd be really interested to hear your views on that.
I think there's a long going development on its way where we've moved from products or commodities to products, from products to services, from services to experience. Mm-hmm. I think the next level, and I agree that was some of the other writers, so this is not something I invented myself, but I truly believe they're right. The next level would be transformation. And it means a real wow service or moment would be where you really do something transformational to your customer. Mm-hmm. And that could be going full circle back to the beginning when we actually are able to enrich their personal story, mm-hmm. in one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And the more we can do that and the more we can replicate that, I think the more we are able to create those wow moments. I think it's when you look back to your own wow moment, is indeed you have taken that moment, that event into your own story. You have made it your own and have enriched yourself. If you would go a bit further, you probably could say, yeah, it also transformed myself. And if we're at that level and we're there earlier than anybody else, all right, I think
you're in a good place.
Yeah, we're in a good place.
Matthijs, thank you very much.
You're welcome.